want your soul.
I don't really know where to start here, but I guess I'll go. My name was Joshua. I used to live in the U.S., in a state I won't mention, with my sister and her son. My sister moved in with me after leaving her abusive husband. What I'm about to say happened about a year and a half ago, but I'm still suffering nightmares and things like that. I was afraid to come out and speak the truth on this story, but after much convincing from a few close friends I felt I could truly, truly trust, I decided to share as a warning. What I'm about to tell you is 100% true. This is no nonsense. This is what myself and my friend experienced. So it was back in June, about a year ago. I had been working at a group home in my state as a social worker or counselor for abused kids. But then after a couple of months, myself and a few other employees, one of them being a close friend of mine named Sam, were let go. I was devastated. I didn't know how I'd make ends meet. I went out looking for jobs, putting in applications, going on interviews, and so did Sam. But nothing I was doing, or he was doing, was turning out well. After the better part of 6 months with myself and Sam still being unemployed, I know I personally began to get really frustrated. I had a mortgage to pay, other bills to pay. Plus, I was taking care of my sister and her kid, so it was safe to say that I needed a job and quick. So, I went searching through Craigslist, and I found this one job. They were looking for people to work at their B&B that was going to open soon. They were looking for live-in housekeepers, a cook, and a front desk clerk. The pay was $20 an hour, and it came with free room and board, with us being able to go back to our own homes on the weekend. I thought, well, shit, I can't beat this. $20 an hour? That's good money. It wasn't working in my career field, but hell, at this point, I was willing to take what I could get. So that evening, I called the number I saw in the Craigslist ad, and this guy with a southern accent answered. I told him I was interested in applying, and he asked when I could come in for an interview. I told him tomorrow. He asked if I could come that very same evening. Huh? Come that evening? That was pretty fast for an interview. I thought that way at least, and I even told the guy this. Not that I was complaining, though, but I just thought it was odd, especially seeing as how it was already 4 p.m. and close to getting dark when I called. Anyway, the guy said they were pretty desperate and that if I really wanted the position, coming that evening would help them out. I agreed to come and asked if I could bring a friend. I was referring to Sam. And the guy said, yeah, sure. Asked me what my name was, gave me the address of where to come to, and said he'll see us when we get here. So I told my sister and my nephew, he was 15 at the time, that I was going to this job I found on Craigslist. I left the house, went to pick up Sam, and we went on our way to the job interview. As we were driving, I got annoyed, listening to Sam's constant rantings about this $20 an hour job being too good to be true. I didn't care if it was too good to be true. I needed a job, and I was desperate, so I was going to believe it was true, no matter what. I couldn't believe how far out it was from the main city, though. I mean, for the better part of an hour, the ride consisted of me driving down a long stretch of rural road, with nothing but woods on both sides. When Sam and I finally got there, though, the B&B was sitting back up off the road and looked like one of those plantation houses you'd see in Louisiana. When we walked up to the porch of the B&B, we were greeted by some skinny, young-faced kid who couldn't have been older than 20, named Trent. Trent looked like someone who belonged at a skater park somewhere, and he gave us this weird smile upon greeting us. He told Sam and I that we were the fourth and fifth applicants that had been interviewed today, and that the other applicants who had come had all been hired on the spot for the positions they wanted. Whoa, I thought. People being hired on the spot? That was rare. Hell, it took me 3 interviews before I was hired to be the counselor at the group home I was working at before. Anyway, as Trent walked us into the B&B and led us into the kitchen, he turned around to face us and said, I think Jack will like you two. And as Sam began to speak, from out of nowhere behind us appeared this big, tall, built-ass guy. The guy was so tall, he looked like he could be a replacement for the wrestler, The Undertaker. Sam and I found out the guy was Jack, the owner of the B&B. After Sam introduced ourselves to him, Sam, Jack, and I walked to a big ballroom area to sit and talk. I asked Jack who it was that I talked to on the phone earlier that evening when inquiring about the job, since I recognized by his voice that I hadn't been talking to him. Jack told me I'd been talking to his brother Charlie. Jack said that Charlie was the brains behind the whole operation. Operation? I asked. You mean behind the opening of the B&B? And Jack responded with a yes and a weird laugh before saying, yeah, that's what I meant. Jack went on to tell us that Charlie would be around the B&B for a little while, but that mostly Charlie would be working behind the scenes and that he and his son Trent and his daughter Marissa would be the ones who would be running and operating the B&B from day to day, once it opened. He then told us that he, Trent, and Marissa worked for Charlie, and that Charlie was an affiliated worker for a top-secret entity within the government. Now, this bit of information piqued my curiosity, so I asked Jack what the entity was, but he wouldn't say. In fact, he changed the subject by suggesting we follow him to his office so he could interview us there, and we did. As we went into his office, the first thing that stood out to me was how fucking creepy it was. There were bottled animals of all types on shelves and tables around the room. Pigs, spiders, even shrunken heads. You name it, Jack had it. It looked like we had stepped into a scene from Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses or some weird-ass shit like that. However, I didn't care much. I didn't care much what he had in his office. All I wanted was the job and the money. So Sam and I sat at his desk, ready to be interviewed by Jack. It was at this time that I noticed a very unique-looking tattoo on his lower arm. It was a black tattoo of an owl with a pyramid in the middle of the body of the owl, and in the middle of the pyramid was an all-seeing eye. I asked Jack what the tattoo meant, and he said that he loved owls and that the tattoo was something he got during college. Before I could probe him any further, he quickly changed the subject by stating his hopes that he could hire two more people so he could finally begin working on getting the B&B ready for opening. And so the interview began, with Jack asking us weird-ass questions, like how wealthy we were, and when was the last time we were sick? What was our eye color? Were we on any type of medications? And even more weird than that, what were our blood types, and if we were both signed up as organ donors on our driver's licenses? Throughout all these questions, Sam and I were like, what the hell do these questions have to do with the jobs we have to do here at the B&B? And Jack assured us, though, that the questions were 100% being legitimately asked in case any emergencies happened to us upon working there. Jack even told us some story of a guy who once worked for him, who was secretly on pain medications, and how one day, Jack found the guy dead in the concrete mixer. Personally, I still found the questions to be beyond weird, though, and so did Sam. And to be honest, I felt like I was just ready to get up and leave, because I was beginning to think that maybe this wasn't even a real interview, and some kind of damn scam or something. But the desperateness of me wanting a job kicked in again, and on top of that, Jack assured us with seriousness once again that the questions were being asked because he was all about safety in the workplace. And so I stayed for the rest of the interview, and so did Sam. But then the interview got even more weird. Jack told us that as soon as Charlie got my name and number from earlier when I called, he and Jack ran a full background check on me. I couldn't believe it. How could he run a background check on me with just my name and number? Sam and I thought this was way beyond creepy. Jack told us that we would be surprised what a person can find out with just a name and a telephone number. And once again, I was totally creeped out. What employer does this even before a potential employee comes for the job interview? At this point, I couldn't hold it in anymore. I had to ask him if this was even a real interview, and he assured Sam and I that it was, and that he had to make sure he was getting the right type of employees. Yeah, right, I thought. I still found something creepy about the entire thing, but I didn't want to leave because I knew I couldn't. I needed a job. So at this point, Jack said the interview was over and that we both were hired because he liked us. Okay, this is good, I thought. I got it. I finally got a damn job. Inside my mind, I was doing backflips. So then Jack showed us around the B&B and told us that before the place opened, we would have to pitch in and do a lot of cleaning to the place, and indeed he was right. With the exception of four rooms in the B&B, every other room he showed us looked like a complete dump, including one room having a body chalk outline on the floor. Jack explained, though, that the body chalk outline came from a murder that occurred when the former owners owned the house. Then he took us to what had to be one of the creepiest rooms in the entire place. The walls of the room were covered in blood, with a gurney sitting on one side of the room and a wheelchair sitting on the other. Jack explained the look of the room as it was told to him by the previous owners of the house. A group of guys were staying at the house while attending a rodeo in town, and one of the guys cut himself and smeared blood all over the walls. Holy shit, I thought. That was creepy in and of itself, but Jack stated that the room resembled the kill room, and that just made the entire situation even more scary in my mind, and it honestly sent chills down my spine. So after viewing the entire inside of the house, I'm thinking, that's it. We've seen the house, we've been hired. We can go home now and come back on Monday, bright and early for work. But nope, because Jack then takes us out to the garage and says he has one last thing to show us, the wooded nature trail. And that confused me. The wooded nature trail? At night? How the hell can he show us the wooded nature trail when it's dark outside? He then gives us each flashlights before he takes one for himself, and then he grabs his shotgun off a shelf. Whoa, I thought. I hate shotguns. When I was 8, my dad and I were at a gas station one night. My dad was robbed at gunpoint and murdered. Ever since then, guns have just scared the shit out of me. Jack assured Sam and I that he was taking the gun because of the dogs that often roamed the woods at night. And that explanation made me now not only not want to go out with someone toting around a gun, but it also made me not even want to go into the woods at all. After seeing the look of annoyance on Jack's face, though, I decided to hide my fears and go along with the gun in the wooded nature trail, after all. I didn't want to lose the job I had just got hired on. So as we walked along the wooded nature trail, going deeper and deeper into the woods, Jack began to ask us what made us tick, what things we enjoyed. Sam said he enjoyed painting. I said I liked what I did as a counselor, helping people, empowering people. As Jack and I began to converse about my last job after a few minutes, he hushed me as he said he heard climbing noises in the trees around him. I looked at Jack as if he were nuts. Of course you heard climbing noises, you moron. You're in the woods, I thought. As Jack eyed a squirrel climbing up the tree, he told me to hold his flashlight while he pointed his shotgun at it. When Sam asked what the hell he was doing, Jack said he was going to shoot the squirrel. Why would he do that, I thought. I asked Jack why, and Jack just shot me the creepiest glare and said, "You're funny." As Jack was about to shoot the shit out of the squirrel, he stopped, looked at me and asked, "Wait a minute. Where are my manners? Do you want to shoot it?" I thought to myself, this man is out of his mind. I'm not one who wants to hurt animals, so I immediately declined. And as Jack asked Sam, Sam declined too. But before Sam could get out any other words beside the word no, Jack fired and shot the squirrel dead to the ground. The sound of the shotgun was so loud that it echoed in my ears like an explosion. As Jack laughed like a madman while trampling over and picking up the dead squirrel that had blood oozing out of it, and looking at it like it had been a tasty lunch meal, I thought, man, this guy is really weird. But I also thought, I don't care if he's weird or not. As long as I had a job, that's all that mattered. I really needed the money. So after killing the squirrel, and after Jack told us how he was going to add the squirrel to his collection of dead animals in his office, we proceeded to walk away from the wooded nature trail, back to the B&B and back to my car. Finally, the most weird job interview ever was appearing to be over. However, the weirdness didn't stop on our way back to the car, though. As we were walking, Jack asked me to hold his dead, bleeding squirrel because he claimed he couldn't hold his gun and the squirrel at the same time. He didn't ask Sam to hold it. He asked me to. And I didn't want to hold it. The thing looked disgusting, dead and bloodied. But because I wanted to keep my current job status as hired, I reluctantly agreed to hold it while we walked back to my car. I held it by the end of its tail, at arm's length, and tried to hold back my urge to vomit out of sickness for what was dangling in front of my eyes. As we walked back to my car, I was mentally thanking the gods that the interview was over. I mean, I was thrilled to finally have a job, but boy, that was one creepy damn job interview. Anyway, as Jack told us to be back at the BB bright and early Monday morning, 8 a.m. to be exact, I gave Jack back his dead and bloody squirrel, happily, and Sam and I got in my car, and I drove away. So that weekend, I packed as much as I thought I would need for the week at the B&B, and when Monday came, I hugged my sister and my nephew goodbye and headed for work. Sam drove to the B&B in his own car, and I met up with him that morning when I arrived there. It was at this time that I also met the other two employees. Katrina, I'm not going to give her last name out of respect for her family, and Rob. I'm not going to give out his last name either. We also met Jack's daughter, Marissa, who looked like a cracked-out 80s version of Ally Sheedy, but just with longer, shaggier hair. We also met Charlie, and Charlie looked like one creepy guy with his dark brown, slick-back hair and his cold black eyes. He was a bit short, but built in the chest. His face looked hard and like he didn't take shit from anybody. After Jack introduced all of us to each other, Jack informed us that there was no need for us to try to use our cell phones because we wouldn't get any service where we were, and that phone and internet service in the B&B hadn't been installed yet. So other than our cars, we had no other way to contact anyone in town. That should have been a red flag in my mind, but it wasn't, because to me it made sense. The B&B was in a rural area, so of course our cell phones wouldn't work up there. After Jack explained all that, we got to work. Katrina began working in the kitchen, cleaning it and performing a cooking test for Trent. I worked on cleaning up the backyard, which included a backyard shed, and I also helped brainstorm some ideas with Charlie as far as advertising. Charlie put Sam to work cleaning the bedrooms and the bathrooms, and Sam said that this scared the shit out of him. He said that one of the rooms he went in had snakes slithering out of every corner of the wall. He said that he saw the snake slithering towards him, and he ran out of the room and into the hallway, where he bumped into Jack. Sam said when he told Jack what he saw in the room, Jack just laughed and said, "So, you found the snake room, huh?" Sam told Jack that he needed an exterminator to get on that problem real quick, and Jack just laughed and said Trent was on it before walking away. Sam even told me that Katrina told him that while she was working with Trent in the kitchen that day, Trent made a comment that creeped her out. Katrina stated that Trent said that judging from her ethnicity, he had bet that she had a lot of melanin within her. Yeah, when Sam told me that, I thought that was beyond weird and creepy. But that wasn't all. Katrina told Sam that Trent continued, and he said how melanin went for $400 on the black market and that people would kill. And Katrina told Sam that Trent put emphasis on the word kill just to get that stuff. Sam said Katrina told him that she didn't know what to say, so she just nodded and said, "Uh-huh," and rushed the hell out of the kitchen. And yeah, as I heard Sam tell me all that, it scared me too. Who has a conversation like that with someone? Later that evening, after we had finished doing day one of cleanup work, getting the B&B ready for opening, we all, which included myself, Sam, Trent, Marissa, Charlie, Katrina, and Rob, sat around a dinner table for dinner. It was a meal that Katrina had cooked earlier for everyone during her cooking test. It was during the dinner that Rob told us that right before the dinner, he had been chased through the wooded nature trail by dogs that belonged to Jack. This should have been another red flag in my mind, but it wasn't. This did, though, scare me, particularly because I have a morbid fear of dogs. Ever since I was 10, I've been scared of dogs, specifically the big ones. Jack explained away the incident as just being one that happened by accident and that the dogs were harmless. But that did nothing to quell Rob's anger over the incident. As everyone talked about how their first day went, Jack began to tell us what was in store for us tomorrow, a spirit cooking ritual. What? I asked him. What the hell was a spirit cooking ritual? Sam and I both asked him now. Charlie just gave us the weirdest answer of how it was hard to explain, but that we would just have to wait until tomorrow to see what it was for ourselves. I would have been fine with that answer, and I think Sam would have too, had we not seen Charlie smile and wink at us immediately after stating his answer. Again, this should have been another red flag for me, but unfortunately, it wasn't. So after dinner, we settled in for the night. We got to sleep. And then at 1 a.m, Trent yelled for us to come downstairs because Jack needed all of us on the wooded nature trail with him, ASAP. At 1 a.m? What for? I thought. Trent said it was because inspection people were coming first thing in the morning, and we needed to help Jack pretty up the wooded nature trail tonight, while he and Marissa and Charlie cleaned up the inside and rested the outside areas of the B&B. I thought, okay, but this couldn't be done at 4 or 5, maybe even 6 a.m. This had to be done at 1 a.m. I don't know why this wasn't sending off numerous red flags in my head at the time. I guess it should have. I guess looking back, I was being so damn naive and gullible. But honestly, it made no sense at all. So with flashlights in hand, Sam, Katrina, Rob, and I walked out towards the wooded nature trail. And the first thing we noticed was that our cars were gone from the garage area. That was weird to us because that's where we parked our cars when we came to the B&B on the first day of us beginning work there. So, who moved the cars? Katrina stated how she thought maybe the cars were moved out so they could clean the garage area, because the garage area did have a funky type of smell to it. And Rob, Sam, and I went along with that idea. Yeah, maybe that's why our cars were moved. Boy, I was quite stupid. Anyway, after walking for the better part of 5 minutes on the wooded nature trail, we heard footsteps a few feet away from us. As we turned to our left, we saw several feet away, Charlie in full army fatigues and black and green war paint on his face. He had an army hat on his head and big black combat boots. In Charlie's left hand was a long butcher knife, and he was standing there, just staring at us like a homicidal lunatic. At that moment, I was terrified. I couldn't understand it, and Sam couldn't understand it. Katrina couldn't understand it, and neither could Rob. Why the hell was he standing there with a knife in his hand, basically looking at us like that? Before we had time to even think any further, we heard growling from behind us. As we all turned round, we saw 3 big black Rottweiler dogs standing a few feet from us with long, sharp white teeth that was showing slight drool dripping from their mouths. And that was the moment that we began to panic. As the dogs instantly began charging towards us, Rob shouted for us to run. And run we certainly did. And as we ran, I looked back at the dogs and saw that another dog had joined the 3 that were already chasing us. This made me pick up the pace in my running, and I told the others to do the same. However, it seemed the more we ran, the further away the B&B seemed to get. As Rob, Sam, and I ran back up the porch of the B&B, we didn't even realize that Katrina wasn't with us. We really had no time to think of anything because as we rushed through the doorway of the house, one of the dogs jumped onto the porch, grabbed hold of Rob's legs, and yanked him down onto the floor of it. As Rob yelled for us to help him, Sam and I grabbed hold of Rob's arms and tried our very best to pull him towards us, towards the inside of the house away from the dog that was biting down on Rob's leg. as blood spurted out of Rob's leg, and as I looked up and saw the other three dogs, I knew we were running out of time. We had to get Rob free from the dog's clenches quick. Sam and I pulled even harder to try to get Rob's legs free, and as the other three dogs rushed onto the porch, that was when Sam and I finally were able to pull Rob free from the dog that was biting his leg. And just as all four dogs reached the door, Sam and I slammed it shut just in time. But the horror wasn't over there. As Sam, Rob, and I remained in the hallway of the B&B, before we could even collect ourselves mentally, a loud shotgun blast was heard from outside, making us all jump. The blast made a huge hole through the front door. I mean, good grief, what was going on? I thought to myself. And at that moment, we heard Jack's voice from the outside. Welcome to the beginning of the spirit cooking ritual, Jack yelled. What was he talking about? What's going on here? I thought. Was this some sort of game or something? And then Rob figured it out. He's trying to kill us, Rob blurted out. And at that moment, in a brief split of a minute, it all made sense. The weird questions Jack asked us during the interview, the bloody kill room Jack showed us, the wooded nature trail tour Jack gave Sam and I during the interview, where he killed the squirrel right in front of us, the mention of the spirit cooking ritual during dinner that previous evening. Yeah, it finally all made perfect sense. We had been lured into a scam. A deadly scam where we were going to be the victims of a frightening murder that would be carried out by a group of nutcases. I began to panic, but I didn't have much time to panic as Rob, Sam, and I heard Trent's voice behind us in the hallway. As Rob, Sam, and I turned around, we saw Trent standing a few feet away from us with a shotgun aimed directly at Rob's head. Before any of us could say a word, Trent fired it, blowing half of Rob's head off and sending blood splashing all over Sam and I. I still can't even think about it without crying. There Sam and I were, standing there in shock as Rob's dead body dropped to the floor, and Trent laughed like a homicidal maniac. And the fact that Trent then said, "That felt good. I love killing," that turned my blood cold. I was beyond terrified at that moment. These people were mental cases. I kept thinking that maybe this was a dream. Maybe this wasn't happening, but no, this was happening, and this was real. As I stood there, shocked and stunned in my fear, Sam grabbed my arm and pulled me up the stairs of the B&B. Why he didn't run with me out of the B&B, I didn't understand it at the time, but I do now. Where would we have gone once we ran out of the B&B? Our cars were taken out of the garage to God knows where, and the B&B was in the middle of nowhere. And from what we knew, Jack was still outside. So where were we going to run to? As Sam ran with me up the stairs, it was very dark on the upper floor, and we couldn't see which rooms were which. Sam tried flipping on the hallway light as we got up on the upper floor, but the lights weren't working. So Sam just ran with me into the first room he saw, and that room happened to be the kill room. As we ran in and Sam closed the door behind us, we saw the room was lit by red light bulbs that were nailed to the ceiling. Sam ran over to the windows and began trying to pull them open, but it was no use. Either Jack, Marissa, Trent, or Charlie had nailed the windows shut from the outside. That didn't stop Sam from trying to pry open the windows, though. Meanwhile, my mind was stuck on what I had just seen downstairs. A murder. A horrifying murder right in front of my very eyes. The blood of someone else splashed all over me. All over my skin. As I looked up, I then saw something that heightened my fear. A few feet away was a gurney, and on that gurney was a dead body. I couldn't tell if it was a male or a female body or not, but the eyes on the body had been removed and the chest of the body had been slit wide open. All of the organs inside the body had been removed and blood was smeared all over the outside of the body's chest. It was horrifying. I kept thinking, is this what they're going to do to us? As I called Sam over for him to see what I was seeing, we both stared shocked and horrified. But then at that moment, we heard Trent's voice yelling, little piggies, let me in. This guy was fucking insane, I thought. Without another minute, Sam grabbed my arm and pulled me over into a closet to hide, with Sam slamming the door to the closet behind us. Right after we were in the closet, we saw Charlie dragging a kicking and fighting Katrina in the room with Jack following behind. I wanted to rush out of that closet to help Katrina, but Sam said no. In fact, Sam covered my mouth to keep me from even making one sound. And in that closet, I saw the second most frightening sight of my entire life. I saw Charlie stabbing Katrina over and over and over as Katrina fought and screamed for her life. And as blood splashed everywhere, he just kept stabbing her in the face until she was dead. All I could do in that closet while watching all this was cry. Cry and wish in my mind that I could help her. That Sam and I both could help her. But we knew we couldn't. If we had rushed out of that closet to help Katrina, Charlie and Jack both would have killed us too. After what had to be about the 10th or 11th stab, we saw Charlie quit the repeated stabbing process, then look at Jack and smile. We heard Charlie say how he was going to drop off the two, now realizing he meant Rob and Katrina, and would come back to the B&B after Jack, Trent, and Marissa finished Sam and I off. I knew then that we needed to get out of here. As we saw Charlie drag Katrina out of the room with Jack following behind, I broke into sobs. I couldn't believe what had transpired in just a matter of minutes, the horror I had seen. As Sam got up from the floor and tried to pull me up, I was too emotional to even stand. I was too traumatized at that point. And before a moment could even go past from Katrina's murder, all of a sudden I found myself being yanked through the wall in the closet and into another room. As Sam yelled out for me and tried to grab me, but couldn't in time. As I yelled and fought to keep myself from being dragged, I was being tossed across the floor of another room before I knew it. The snake room, like the kill room, and it was also lit by red light bulbs that were nailed to the ceiling. I knew I was in the snake room because within seconds, as I got to my feet, I saw snakes slithering out from every corner of the wall, and the one thing I'm scared of more than dogs is snakes. I rushed to where I thought the door of the room would be, but I couldn't find it. It was as if the door of the room didn't exist. I began yelling and pounding on the door for help, for Sam, but nothing happened. No one came for me, so I did the only thing I could think of to do, move as far away from the snake slithering towards me as possible, and try to defend myself. Out of pure fear, I broke into sobs. You can call it being a sissy or whatever for crying, but I was scared. I was scared shitless. As I was backing up, someone grabbed me from behind and yanked me out of the room. As I was kicking and fighting to get free from the person dragging me down the hallway, I looked up and saw it was Jack dragging me. I thought I was going to die. I knew this was it. He had me. And I was going to die. As he dragged me down to the basement to a closed door that read operating room on it, I fought even harder. I knew I had to do something, anything to prevent from going on the other side of the door. However, all my fighting was in vain. Jack was much bigger and much more built than I was. I couldn't get free of him. As he opened the closed door and dragged me inside the room behind it, he dragged me over to a gurney in the room. Jack picked me up and threw me down on the gurney. I felt a large pain shoot through my back. I was sure he had in fact broke my back with the way he slammed me down onto it. This is when my fear turned into anger. Anger and determination as I took my feet and I kicked him with such force that he fell down to the floor. At that moment, I jumped up off the gurney and ran towards the steps of the basement, but not before Jack grabbed me by the back of the legs and tripped me up. As I fell to the floor, Jack jumped up and grabbed a hatchet sitting on a shelf next to him. As I saw that hatchet in his hand, I knew I had to either really fight back or die at that moment. I had another choice. And then at that moment, Jack swung the hatchet down, aiming for my legs, but I rolled away just in time. As I got to my feet, he grabbed me by the neck from behind and slammed me up against the wall in front of him. He held me against the wall by squeezing his hands tightly around my neck. I thought right then and there that that was the end of me. I began seeing blurriness. My mind at that moment went back to the very moment I called about the job, and I began mentally wishing that I had never even called in the first place. I was about to give up, but I didn't. Because I knew I wasn't ready to give up at that moment. I wasn't ready to die. So I reached my arm over as far as I could and I managed to grab a pair of scissors hanging on a nail from the wall. I took the scissors and stabbed it down hard into his arm. As he yelled and let go of my neck, I dropped to the floor almost like a rag doll. Throughout all my coughing and gagging to breathe, after almost being choked out, I crawled away on the floor before managing to get to my feet and run to the other side of the room where I grabbed a pistol sitting on the shelf. And as Jack rushed over to me, he stopped in his tracks as he saw me aiming the pistol at him. I couldn't believe it. At that moment, the very thing I was afraid of and didn't want anything to do with, I was actually holding in my hand and about to use it to kill someone who was trying to kill me. And there stood Jack, a few feet away from me, smiling like a loon. "What are you going to do?" he said to me. "You going to shoot me? You don't like guns, remember? In fact, didn't you say that guns scare you? So don't be a little moron." "I will," I replied. "I should shoot you after you murdered Katrina and Rob." He then laughed at me and said I didn't have the balls to shoot him. And as he took steps forward towards me, my heart began to swell with fear. I didn't want to fire that gun because he was indeed right. Guns did scare me. But as he rushed towards me and tackled me down to the floor, I realized I had no choice. Of course, at this moment, it was hard for me to even pull the trigger, as he had his hands now wrapped around the gun, trying to pry it from my hands. As we fought and tussled on the floor, somehow, I believe now, out of pure luck, I managed to pull the trigger. Not once, but three times, firing it into his chest. As his eyes widened and blood spilled from his mouth, he dropped down dead on top of me. I was almost sick, and in that moment, I went into a brief mental breakdown. Somehow, throughout the breakdown, I managed to push him off me and get to my feet. But as I stood there, I stared down at my bloody, trembling hands in stunned shock. I was seconds, just mere seconds away from mentally cracking up, because I had never killed anyone before. It was hearing Sam's yelling from outside that shook me out of my moment, as I call it. As I looked around the room for what I could use to help Sam, I grabbed a baseball bat sitting on the shelf and ran up the stairs to Sam's aid. Once I ran outside, following Sam's yells, I saw Trent on top of Sam, a few feet away from the porch of the B&B, choking him. Anger erupted within me and I ran over and bashed Trent in the back of the head with a bat. As I dropped the bat and dropped down beside Sam, I helped Sam up to his feet after asking if he was all right. He was coughing with severity and said he felt weak and lightheaded. As I looked up, I counted it as a miracle that Marissa's truck was in the driveway. It hadn't been there when Sam, Rob, and I had run back into the B&B before. I hurriedly helped Sam get over to the truck, got him inside, and cursed in anger when the keys weren't in the ignition. It was at this moment that Sam told me the keys were on Marissa, whom Sam had killed in the hallway of the B&B before being attacked by Trent. So I left Sam inside the truck, told him I'd be right back, and rushed into the B&B for Marissa's keys. I didn't even realize that Trent was no longer lying on the ground in front of the B&B any longer. As I rushed inside, from out of nowhere, Trent jumped on my back like some kind of spider monkey or something and began biting me and tearing at my skin on my neck and lower face. And it was at this moment that Trent and I became embroiled in a fight. As I struggled to get him off me, and once I did, we began exchanging blows and our fight rolled over into the dining room where we were knocking over tables. I mean, the fight was brutal and he was strong, stronger than I had thought. As the fight continued, somehow Trent got on top of me and began choking me. What was it with this guy and choking people? I fought as hard as I could to get his hands off of my neck, but I couldn't. He was strong. As I was close to blacking out, Sam rushed up from behind Trent and put Trent in a tight chokehold while pulling him off me. As Trent and Sam now became engaged in a fight, all I could do was gag and cough with severity, trying to regain my composure after almost being choked out. I don't remember how long the fight between Sam and Trent lasted, but I do remember Sam eventually jumping on top of him and with a knife in his hand, slashing Trent's throat, killing him. Sam then looked at me and I looked at him, and we sighed with relief that it was over. We survived, and it was over. As we both walked out of the B&B and walked out to the truck, we got inside and drove away. But we had no clue that it wasn't over just yet, because hiding in the back seat of the truck was Charlie. As Sam drove with me in the front passenger seat, Charlie popped up from the back seat and grabbed Sam from around the neck, trying to strangle him. These people must have had some obsession with strangling. I was so tired of it. As Sam almost lost control of the wheel while gagging to breathe, I told Sam to keep his hands on the wheel. I then bit down hard on Charlie's arm, making blood stream and making Charlie yell out in pain while letting go of Sam. I had finally had enough of this, and at that moment, anger jumped into me, and I jumped into the back seat and tackled Charlie down to the floor. We began fighting, exchanging blows with each other, and as Charlie got on top of me, trying to once again do what they obviously love to do, strangle me, I managed to take my right foot and press down on the back of the car door handle, a few feet away from me to open it. As the door swung open, I took my right foot and kicked Charlie hard, sending him flying off me and out of the car. With quickness, I shut up, grabbed the car door handle, and slammed the car door shut. As I looked out the back, I saw Charlie stand to his feet on the road, shake his head, and shoot his eyes over at the car we were driving away in, with rage. He had to be pretty strong to survive being kicked out of a moving car. Finally, it was over. Sam drove us straight to the police station in town, and we told two detectives everything that happened. Told them all about Jack, Trent, Marissa, and Charlie. Told them the address to the B&B. Later, one of the detectives told us that he sent officers out to the address we gave him, and that there was nothing or no one there but an empty house. No bodies of Jack, Marissa, or Trent. No spirit cooking ritual. And they didn't find any snakes in the snake room. No blood or gurney or anything creepy in the kill room. In fact, the detective said that the house was an old plantation house that had been abandoned for years. I couldn't believe it, and neither could Sam. We both know what we saw. We know what happened to us there. So what was happening? The detective told us a car would take Sam and I home from the station because Marissa's car that we had drove to the station in was being impounded. So we went home. As we were riding home, though, in the same car together, I thought back to something the detective told me in the interrogation room while I was at the station, and I told Sam about it. I told Sam how in the interrogation room, the detective mentioned the spirit cooking ritual, and how I had never even mentioned it to either of them. For some reason, I had forgotten all about it. I asked Sam if he had mentioned the spirit cooking ritual to either detective, and Sam swore and declared he didn't, and that he didn't even think of it, because he was more focused on telling about the murders of Rob and Katrina that he had seen. So how did the detective know about that, unless he and the other detective were in on it? Once I got home, I decided to Google the detectives' names, and I found online a picture that both the detectives had taken with the police chief and the rest of the police department staff. And on the bare arms of both detectives and the police chief was the same exact tattoo that Sam and I saw on Trent and Jack's arms. Only the tattoos that were on the police chief and two detectives' arms were smaller than the one Jack had on his. That means those two detectives and the police chief were in on what was going on. The entire force could have been behind this stuff, for all I know. Days later, Sam and I each received a visit from two men who identified themselves as CIA agents. The agents told us that they had gotten in contact with the police and detectives at the station we went to, and that they knew our story and what happened to Sam and I, and that we were to tell no one else of what happened to us, because if we did, there would be serious consequences. I found the entire experience quite alarming, and I asked them why, and if they were connected to Jack, Charlie, Trent, and Marissa, but they wouldn't tell me nor Sam. They just said that for our safety and livelihood, to not tell anyone else what happened to us, and that they would be watching our every move. This concerned me, and it also made me believe that not only was the entire police department behind what happened to us, but that the government was in on it as well, possibly. So here I am, present day. I've changed my name, and so has Sam. And we've moved our families out of the state, where we were, and in fact, that of the U.S. I won't say what country we're in now, but we're in hiding for our safety. But I still don't think we're safe where we are. I mean, Sam and his family and me and my family, we've had to move 6 different times because each time we settled in a place, we felt like they had found us, due to us getting constant threatening and harassing phone calls, having our homes broken into and feeling like we were being watched and followed. In the country we're in now, we've been here for about 3 months. We think we may be safe, but we're still unsure. We're constantly looking over our shoulder. I don't think we will ever feel confidently safe. I can't really explain what happened, but I believe that job ad we responded to was to lure us into being the victims of some type of government organ harvesting, melanin theft type of shit. And to this day, I suffer from nightmares almost every night from what I went through. My life has never been the same, and it never will be. Sam turned to alcohol to cope with what had happened to him, and that in turn affected his life so much that he and his wife divorced. I wanted to come here, though, as I said, to warn people, and that Sam and I are working with some of our friends to try to get the story out to people on a wider scale, because all of them, Trent, Marissa, and Jack are dead, but Charlie is still alive. He's still out there somewhere. And who's to say Charlie won't recruit new people and do this all over again to somebody else? So I'm warning you, be careful about what jobs you take and respond to on Craigslist. Because if this could happen to me and to my friend Sam and to the other employees who responded to it, it can happen to you too. Find out if the job you're responding to and applying to is a real job. And if it's too good to be true, it probably is. If the job is out in the middle of nowhere with no cell phone service, don't take it. Something could be wrong there. So I just wanted to warn people. I feel better knowing I did, but what happened to me will be with me for the rest of my life, haunting me, terrifying me. But hopefully, if you followed my advice, the same terrifying event that happened to me will never happen to you.